Welcome to the Security Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Swinger and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast and leave us an awesome five-star review and follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter.
We're here to talk more about cybersecurity. Each episode will focus on a specific topic or two of interest to the community. Today, we're talking about everybody's favorite color, purple.
I know, it's my favorite color.
Obviously. Everyone who knows you knows that.
Views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
And this is why it's David's favorite color, because the only one on the purple team back in Roman times was the emperor. All right. What is purple teaming? I'm sure at this point everybody's heard of purple teaming, but we're going to start with a little bit of kind of background on the whole color thing. So typically when you're talking about colors, you're talking about red team, blue team. The red team attacks, the blue team defends. This is a tradition that is used everywhere in every game, it seems like. And this should be a collaborative enterprise, right? You're both working for a company. You're both trying to make the company safer. But a lot of times it can get kind of adversarial, which comes down to the way that the teams are organized, some competition, and maybe how responsibilities and incentives are set up. As an example, the red team and blue team incentives may be different. The red team, their incentive may be, they're incentivized to find gaps and get in. That's how success is determined for them. The blue team, at least when facing the red team, their incentive is in discovering the red team, and they're rewarded and given accolades for discovering the red team. And the opposite for the red team, like if they're found, it's kind of considered a failure. I mentioned organization as well. Do the red and blue teams interact reasonably often, or do they only interact when there's a new red team report being filed? In terms of responsibilities, this was pointed out in a Daniel Meisler article, which will be linked, but a lot of teams, they'll say, oh, no, my job on the red team is to find the issues. I don't fix it. The blue team fixes it. Or the blue team saying, well, no, my job is to fix it, or my job is to monitor it. I'm not supposed to attack it or figure out how to break it. And then, of course, there's the competition piece. You know, who wins? If the red team gets in, they win. If the red team doesn't get in, the blue team wins. And it shouldn't be about that. It should be about how do we make security better for all of us? That should be the win.
And that's a lot of the challenges with the red team, blue team mindset is, I don't know how many times I've heard it is like red team are attackers, blue team are defenders. When really they're both defense teams. They're both supposed to help defense. You don't red team just to attack. You red team in order to improve defense.
Because it's cool.
Well, I mean, if you've ever been, and I've had to do this for a couple of companies, is stand at a booth at a job fair.
Oh God.
And have these people come up who want to get into cybersecurity.
And they all want to be pen testers.
They all want to be pen testers.
Oh my God. I did that a couple of times. Yeah. But what's interesting too, is everybody has said for years that in order to do blue team, right, you need to know how to red team, which I'm not 100% on board with, but it does really feed the purple team mindset. So the purple team is kind of a new variant, which maybe it shouldn't be new. Maybe it should have been there the whole time, but it's kind of a new variant that combines both capabilities into a single entity. Now, some people argue it's not a physical team, specifically Daniel Meisler, who's one of the articles that he wrote is kind of a large portion of the research I did for this. He argues that it's not a physical team, but it's really a relationship or a mindset or a function that maybe pulls people from other teams, but it's not, you know, a permanent team itself. So one of the things you can do here is make sure your incentives are aligned, where the goal is to create new content that finds bad guys and define that as success, and finding and closing gaps in security, that's a success. Rather than the red team, you know, if the red team just finds gaps and gets in, but doesn't help the blue team to close the gaps, define that as a failure.
Well, that kind of goes up to, you know, setting up framing the situation ahead of time with, you know, what is success look like, and make sure everyone is aware of that and agrees that that is what success looks like, so that when they come out of that, they can say, oh, well, we have been successful because of this, you know.
Yeah. So just before we kind of dive deeper into who's on the purple team and what they do, et cetera, there was also an article pulled out of here by April Wright. Well, it was a talk at Black Hat called Orange is the New Purple 2016. Yeah, there'll be a link in the show notes where she suggested that there should be a third team. So we've got blue as defenders, red as attackers, and following the primary color theme, there should be yellow, which is your engineers who build products. And then just like purple is between red and blue, there's now orange, which is between blue and yellow, and green, which is in blue and, I'm sorry.
Green is between orange. Yellow and blue.
Yeah, green is, but yep, you know, I fail at primary colors.
You don't have any Ziploc bags at the house, do you?
I don't. The ones I have the zipper on top, so I don't even have to.
Oh, yeah, those are terrible.
Those are awesome.
I don't like them.
All right, that's fair. But well, apparently it didn't help me here to figure out what the colors are.
But yellow and blue make green.
Yeah, and yellow and red make orange. That being said, that's not really what the topic was about. I just thought it was kind of interesting. It was mentioned in the other one. So we'll move on. That may be a topic for another time at some point. So who is on the purple team? Well, this is actually more of a discussion topic because I haven't been on a purple team before. So, but definitely you've got your penetration testers on the blue team 100%. You've got some experienced security operations analysts there, people that are able to detect and create detections potentially, and your content developers, which frankly, in a lot of cases, your content developers are your senior security operations analysts. So those are the ones that are pretty much always going to be involved. And then you may have some other people involved directly or peripherally, kind of after the fact, your security engineers, your threat intel team, your forensics and IR teams.
Yeah, I think the security engineers could be an important part of this if there are necessary configuration changes to defensive tools or detection tools that are in the environment. And this may not necessarily be security engineers, but maybe network engineers if they're managing your firewalls and your proxies. So it could be different teams throughout IT depending on what role they play within the organization.
Yeah. And that too, because I can see usually, at least in my experience, changing content can be very quickly done because the content's usually under the control of the security team. But if you're requesting like firewall changes, you're requesting like Windows changes, that's usually a process. So that frequently can't be done kind of within the context of an exercise. Although maybe you can change it locally on one or two machines to validate and then, you know, request it changed everywhere.
Well, it could be like any other exercise. At the end, you have a list of assignments and lessons learned and, you know, this has to be done. That firewall rule has got to be changed, et cetera, et cetera.
Fair enough. So that's who's involved. When does purple teaming occur? Well, obviously it should occur all the time.
Of course.
What's your cue? Tell me I'm full of
I was getting to that. I mean, I say it so often.
Given at this point.
But I mean, you can't have your defenders spending all their time working with the red team. They got to have time to defend, do their monitoring, and make sure defense is actually taking place.
Whatever.
I mean, the red team, that's the thing. The red team doesn't have anything else to do. But do attack stuff, right? So with the blue team, they're on all the time. A lot of organizations have the 24/7 monitoring, defense, etc. So I think you really have to do this on a schedule, monthly or quarterly, where you have these exercises where you set aside some of your blue team's time to work with the red team on these types of things. You can't do it in a continual basis all the time. And actually, you know, as being a little bit facetious on the red team there, but they do have to spend some time prepping for these events. They can't just do these all the time either. And one of the things that Daniel mentions in his article is that these events should be where the red team is mimicking the TTPs of a known threat actor. So they need to have time to research those TTPs in order to exercise those during the purple team event.
See, I kind of disagree with that. Although that strongly depends where you are on the maturity scale. I think that when you're starting this off, like it's probably enough to focusing on, you know, maybe looking over your alerts that don't fire or looking over alerts that fire a lot and then maybe starting off there rather than mimicking adversaries, or looking at gaps in your, you know, MITRE, like what stuff do we not have? More, you know, just general threat intel, like what stuff do we see the most often? The Matthew Kiener feed of threat intel, like we talked about before, like we know that, you know, HTA documents and all these different scripting documents. And then you can use something like Atomic Red Team. You don't need to build out like a full exercise for those.
Well, maybe what you do is you have them different categories of events. So maybe every quarter it's changed up where, you know, one, you're looking at gaps, two, you're looking at adversary techniques, and the third quarter, you're looking at something else. And, you know, you give different outcomes for the different events maybe.
Yeah, and it depends also, on your maturity and what other tools you have. Like if you have a breach and attack simulation, you probably don't need to do atomic tests. You've got an automated solution that's just hammering out the same basic tests 24 times a day, 365 days a year.
Right.
Then you probably definitely need to be looking at adversary emulation because you've got the basic stuff covered.
Yeah, it also comes down to how much time you can have to dedicate to this as well.
You do it all the time.
Well, I mean, at Kiener Inc., sure. I mean, you've got like a 50-man blue team there. I mean, you got guys to spare.
Of course.
But other places don't. So if you can only do this once a year, twice a year versus every month or every quarter or something, you have to be a little bit more judicious in the use of your team's time. So maybe it's more bang for the buck to do gap detection instead of adversary emulation.
Yeah. And it makes sense too, as well, that with the red team, also the red team's probably going to want to do some black box testing where, Because part of this too is this question is, what are you testing? If you're testing the content, then you definitely want to do a purple team, like hand in fist with the red team as they're doing their stuff so that you can, you know, immediately check up on it. But if you're testing the security team's response, then, you know, the red team should not be telling the blue team we're doing something right now, because you're trying to figure out, are the analysts responding correctly to it versus, you know, validating that the content detection and prevention technologies are working.
Well, wouldn't that just be a standard red team event then?
Well, that was my point, is you can't just, it's not all purple team.
Oh, right.
This is not something that like you flip the switch and it's just all purple team all the time.
Right.
Which I guess goes actually back to what Daniel was saying, is that it's more of a capability. It's more of a mindset and a function than it is a specific team. Huh. Damn it. Just proved him right. All right.
You have to send him a letter, maybe some chocolate.
I mean, I already subscribed to his feed, so I pay him $100 a year for his brain. There's not many people I support online, but he's one of them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I can't afford to support many of them, at least not at what he charges. So why do purple teaming? So, I mean, number one is, if the goal is to protect the organization, then we kind of need a mindset shift, because the red team, blue team model has been done for years and years. And in a lot of enterprises, it's just strictly broken. I mean, we were there together at one place where the test came back year after year with the same stuff broken. And it was the same stuff that frequently wasn't security's responsibility to fix. I mean, it was our responsibility to, you know, tell IT and work with IT and try to convince IT, but it was not necessarily within our power to actually make different.
Yeah. I mean, the organization has to do prioritization as well.
Yeah.
You know, if they don't prioritize those repairs, then you're not going to get anything to accomplish, even if you are doing the purple team.
Yeah.
So you definitely need a leadership buy-in for this.
Yeah. Well, and just thinking, like, again, like that fell under that competition thing. Like every year after the pen test, the red team walked away being like, yeah, we rocked them. We were great. Even though they did the same stuff they did last year. And the blue team walked away being like, well, crap, you know, we tried to fix it and it didn't work out. And now we suck again.
That can be a bit demoralizing.
A little bit. So how is purple teaming done? Well, there's a couple ways. I'm taking a SANS course on purple teaming right now, and obviously I won't share their secrets because they probably kicked me out of their program for that. And also I'm going to share the Scythe purple team exercise framework here and kind of talk about how to do it on a team basis as well. So the first thing you need to do, obviously, is figure out what you're going to do. There's a couple options here. You can do the adversary emulation if you are a fancy pants, or You can do atomic tests for individual pieces of content. That can, you can look at, I want to test this rule, or you can look at a MITRE tactic. I want to test this method of data exfiltration. It's actually kind of similar to hunting in that way. Then if you're doing this on an individual basis, you can perform that specific attack. So let's say you wanted to test HTML applications, which are frequently used by a lot of attackers because they tend to not be blocked by AppLocker. So there's a couple different options. You can go to Atomic Red Team Test from Red Canary. You can go to any number of places where you can download. There's one that Sans uses, which I don't know if I can share or not, but there's just a website where you can go and download a malicious HTA file that attempts to perform semi-neutered malicious stuff. I wouldn't download it on your work computer, but if you had a VM you're doing this testing on, it's probably, so that's where you'd want to do it. Then after you perform this test, you download and run this HTA file. Then you're going to have to check, you know, was it blocked? If not, what can you change to block it? Is there, do some research, do some figuring out, you know, go ask the question on forums, places like that. Also go back and check, did it set off any alerts? Especially if you're testing a specific piece of content, you want to see that alert go off. If the alert did not go off, we kind of go back to what we talked about last week with the, where in the alert chain did it fail? Was it not detected? Was it not logged? Was the log not forwarded to Splunk? Or I guess we're not talking, we talked about Splunk last week.
To your SIM.
Was the alert, yeah, to your SIM. Was the alert logic flawed, et cetera, et cetera. Then if there were no logs, like go back and figure out, can you change the logs? Can you change the detections? All of that thing. Then you've got to go back and work with IT to change the settings to detect and block the attack if feasible, work with your own content providers to modify the content. And then you just repeat that on kind of an individual basis. You can do this whole thing yourself. If you've got time, you know, one Friday afternoon, you can download a couple of those Atomic Red Team tests and just start working through them on a VM. Actually, you probably need a little more setup than that because you'll need to set up logging and detection on your VM. So maybe not quite a snap decision like that, but you can definitely do this on a small scale basis by yourself. Now, if you're doing it on a team basis, I think in my ideal, although maybe not in this day of remote work, maybe you're all in a chat room, but ideally you'd sit down with the red team in a conference room somewhere and the red team does their normal thing. But instead of just blowing through all of your defenses and, you know, pausing for a brief touchdown party or whatever, once they get your Active Directory credentials, they would pause at each step and they'd stop and they consult with the blue team and they start asking the same questions. They say something like, hey, you know, I just broke into this web application on this server. Did you guys see anything from the server? No. All right. Well, let's go, you know, check Splunk. Are there any logs for the server? No. All right. Well, let's go, you know, SSH into the server, RDP into the server, and let's go take a look at the local logs. Did we get anything there? What are the settings on this server? What could be done to prevent it? Because hopefully the red team will know, or if not, you know, then you do the research and try to figure out how you can prevent it. And really, then it's the same thing afterwards. You compile a report afterwards that details what was found, how you can block it, detect it, how you can fix the content, and then, you know, assign out your tickets to get that stuff fixed.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily all one way either, because the red team should get something out of this as well. So if the red team attempts an attack and it fails, they should also talk to the blue team about, hey, why did my attack not work? And maybe they can get an idea about how they can circumvent that attack to give the, and then challenge the blue team again in a different way. So the red team gets better as well. And get something out of this and better understands the defenses and how they work too.
No, that's a phenomenal point, because again, this is not about winning. This is not about the blue team, you know, high-fiving each other when the red team's attack fails, is they can work with them and help them figure out like, oh, you know what? We know there's a gap around this thing, rather than have the red team kind of flail about and
they could have failed from a fluke. Where to go. Too. You know, maybe they attacked a server that had a setting that was different from every other server in the environment. And if they had changed their attack, their destination, they'd have been successful.
Every server is configured correctly and identically. What are you talking about?
Of course, group policy, flawless.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Scythe has a purple team exercise framework. If you go to their main page, they try and get your email address to send it to you. But if you do a Google search, you'll find out that they have it on GitHub as well. So you can just go there and scope it out from there. So Scythe is an adversary emulation platform. So it makes sense that they are very adversary focused, adversary emulation focused, but it doesn't have to be. Again, you can do this with atomic tests. You don't have to do an adversary emulation that's unnecessarily fancy. So at a high level, your threat intel or your red team or whoever's coordinating the exercise kind of makes the decision on what adversary you're emulating. And based on that, they're going to pick out kind of the TTPs, the MITRE tactics and techniques, and the technical details of what exactly they're going to be doing. And this goes back to, you probably want to feed this with threat intel, who's targeting your specific industry. It would do you very little good to, you know, select a adversary that targets, you know, government offices if you're not the government. Although you could do that. Then they have attendees do a tabletop discussion of existing controls and expectations, which is a new thing for me in this context. This is something Dave and I have discussed at great length about tabletops for years. But this is kind of cool because I think this would be a really interesting way of testing people's expectations for how secure they are. Because I can imagine that during a tabletop like this, you're going to be like, all right, here's what we're doing. We're emulating this adversary. Here's how they get in and here's all the steps they take.
No, actually, it might not be a bad idea, and this may actually help with your organizational buy-in, is to do a tabletop exercise with the leadership. Don't have the technical people involved, and let them run through the tabletop as they would expect it to go, and then actually do the exercise based on the premise of the tabletop and see if what the leadership's expectations were compared to what the actuality was when it was executed, and then do a back brief to the leadership on exactly what happened versus the tabletop to give them an idea about, well, here's your assumption and here's what actually happened and here's why. Because here's what I'm thinking as far as that goes is because if your leadership has a certain assumption and then you prove that assumption is invalid, maybe you can get better support for what you're trying to do on either side of that defensive mechanism to make improvements, because the leadership will see firsthand that their assumptions were incorrect, and maybe because they assumed one way and the actuality was something different, and you've shown it to them, they can realize that maybe they need to shift their focus or shift their mindset as well on how they're directing the defensive posture within the organization.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I definitely subscribe to that. I'm just thinking as a...
You can call bullshit if you want.
No, I think it's different. I think the thing is it's going to be... I think different levels are going to have different expectations. And I don't know that anybody be willing to do... I don't know if anybody would be willing to like do it separately for each one. Cause I think because this is what we talked about in the past. It'd be cool to do a tabletop at multiple levels, like where you've got like the technical level of people that are doing the actual work and they're doing like an actual exercise where, you know, they're reviewing phishing emails. So you're getting more of a realistic timeline and like realistic, you know, fog of war. And then there's like a middle management layer that's taking data in from the technical layer and then feeding information back up to the senior layer. And then the senior layer that's trying to make high level decisions and then looking, because that gives you an accurate idea of kind of the fog of war and like where mistakes are being made and not having the right information.
Right. Yeah. That's actually a very similar to the way that the military actually, or at least the army actually does their exercises, depend on the level at which the exercise is done, because they do exercises at the you know, the squad level, the company level, the battalion level, the brigade level, division, and even corps level. When they do it at the corps level, then, you know, obviously they're looking at completely different than when from the company level. So it's kind of along the same lines.
Huh. That makes sense. Yeah. But they almost never do that. Usually tabletops when done are typically done at like the C level, or they're done at like the managerial level. And there's a lot of assumptions around what you see and what you don't see. So then we get to the actual doing the work. The red team emulates the TTP. Oh, you know what? I almost forgot something. So I think one of the valuable things coming out of the tabletop exercise is going to be people's expectations of what's going to happen. And when I mean say expectations, I mean, generally speaking, every company and every person that works in a company has an idea of where they think the issues are. They're going to say things like, oh, well, we're, you know, our AV strong. We're going to catch them on the endpoint, or, you know, we've got great, great protections across the network. We'll definitely detect them there.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things, you know, we were talking about a second ago with the C-levels is they might think, well, hey, if this thing happens, well, that's going to be unsuccessful because this is the policy we have.
Or this is the tool we just spent $1 million on.
Right. I mean, everybody's password has to be 8 characters.
Obviously.
And be a strong password, uppercase, lowercase, everything. So brute force against passwords is going to fail because we have a strong password policy.
Yeah. God, do you remember that red team locking everybody out because they accidentally sent too many failed password attempts?
No, thankfully I don't. There's scarred me for life. I don't remember that.
It was when we were working together, and they had a bunch of, it was a red team, and all of a sudden, like, the help desk started lighting up as people were like, hey, I'm locked out. Hey, I'm locked out. And they had done a local brute force attack, but it was a very minimal brute force attack. It was using 2 passwords per user, which frankly wouldn't have tripped any alerts anyways. I don't know why they bothered with it, but apparently they screwed it up and sent 8 fake attempts or 9 fake attempts instead of 2 and locked out everybody on. Anyways, it was, yeah.
You know, that's probably, you know, even running at 2, I bet that would have bumped up the health desk calls anyway, because the people who failed their one time, failed to put it in one time and got locked out.
Yeah. I mean, that happens to me frequently in the morning. I get online, I fail it once and I'm like, crap. And I fail it a second time. I'm like, oh God. All right. 1 key at a time.
Very slow and methodical.
Exactly. All right. Anyways, so now back to this. So now we get to the actual work. The red team emulates the first TTP. The blue team analysts follow the process to try to detect it. They document the results. They perform adjustments. This is just fancy talk for what we talked about earlier, where they work together to figure out, you know, hey, you know, all right, so I ran it. I tried to hit this server. Did you see anything? Yes or no? Because frankly, like, that's the part that's important, is that timely feedback. Just thinking back to red team reports I've seen in the past, you get a red team report weeks or months after the fact, and then you've got to find the time to go review the stuff, and then you've got to go try and actually find it and figure out if you logged it or not, which again, going back months after the fact, hopefully you're retaining the data that long, but you're probably not locally on the server. You're probably rotating those logs pretty quickly, but you know, if it's logging into Splunk or your SIM, like, maybe you have it. So I think that timeliness is a real important part of this. So you document the results, you perform the adjustments to your detection, and maybe hopefully to blocking if you have the ability to locally change things on 1 or 2 servers or maybe a firewall. Then you repeat the TTP again, figure out if it's blocked, figure out if what you changed fixed it. And frankly, I bet that's a little cycle that just repeats over and over again until you can be like, all right, we know how to block it. We know how to detect it. But anyways, document any feedback or additional action items, stuff like, you know, make this change across the environment. And then you go back to 3 and you emulate the next TTP and you keep working your way through the list of TTPs one after the other, figure out how you're going to block and detect each one.
Yeah, I'm sure this is going to be different after the first time you do it, because you may have an assumption about how many you're going to be able to do the first time. You know,
we're like, yeah, we're going to do this whole thing in 4 hours.
Yeah. You know, we have, you know, a dozen TTPs we're going to run through today, and then we'll hit another dozen tomorrow. And maybe, you know, after you run through this, you're like, we got 2 done today and that's it. So that'd be a learning thing the first time you do this about, you know, what that scale is going to look like, how much you can actually get done.
And this actually goes back to what you're talking about before, about the fluke, about they went to the one server that wasn't configured correctly or something. Like, what's your scope too? Do you test each of these on one server? Because you've probably got different enclaves. You've probably got different, you know, lab environments versus front office versus back office versus manufacturing, if you have that, versus cloud. And they may all have different settings.
Well, I mean, this I think you need to start this thing off with the same thing you should start off every red team exercise with.
Scope.
And that's the rules of engagement.
Yeah.
To make sure that, you know, everyone's expectations are on the same page and, you know, you don't do something by mistake that causes production impact, or you don't get the outcome you're looking for because you're targeting the wrong thing, or you're looking in the wrong place or whatever.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. Like, this is the sort of thing when you start doing purple teaming stuff, you're starting off on the individual level, doing some individual tests yourself. And then you're probably scoping it out to a single attack range when you're doing online tests. And then you're eventually spreading out and doing more and more more scope, more different environments, et cetera. You're right. You're probably not trying to hit all of your environments for the single TTP. That's probably a separate engagement in each environment. Keep your red team busy.
Yeah, because that's one thing that Daniel actually talked about in his article about. In-house red teams ended up getting neutered and then complaining about, or not necessarily complaining, but not being able to do what they could do when they were external, or the same thing that an external red team does, and getting very despondent and end up leaving the organization because of that.
I saw that. I've never worked anywhere that's actually maintained an internal red team. So we've always, you know, brought in external pen testers, but yeah, I can see where if you're, you know, especially if you're defining success as the blue team wins and the red team wins, like when one of them has to win for it to be a success, I can imagine that leads to a lot of infighting between, you know, managers of the teams. And like, if the red team doesn't break in, you know, all year round, are they considered a failure by the end of the year if that was their metric?
Right. Well, I mean, if they continually fail, are they competent or not?
Maybe your security is really good, but probably not.
I don't know. I'd be more skeptical if your red team continually failed. I'd be more skeptical that the red team was competent and the blue team was just awesome than the other way around. You know, yeah. No offense to the blue team people out there, but
yeah, you're not right. You're not wrong. Yeah, but on the other hand, the other one would suck too. What if your red team just won every time and they're having a great? That's great for their morale. They're like, "Woo, we're the best."
Well, that's why you got to do this purple team in order to help the blue team out.
Yeah, that's fair.
They need to be improving each other. If your red team's constantly failing, then you know this purple team should hopefully help them by talking to the blue team about what those defenses look like and maybe give them ideas about different averages of approach or different techniques or whatever. So the purple team idea is, you know, it's a give and take for both teams with an idea to improve both teams and the organization's defenses at the same time.
Yep, that makes sense. And that seems like a good place to finish it.
So thanks for listening to the Security Serengeti podcast. Follow us on Twitter @SerengetiSec and download and listen to us on your favorite podcast app.